Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
On a hot summer night 50 years ago, while other U.S. troops were fighting an enemy in Vietnam, dozens of Marines at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina were fighting each other. A riot on the base was the first in a string of major racial incidents in the military that led to massive reforms in the way the armed forces dealt with race. Jay Price from member station WUNC has our story.
For anyone who visits the calm, orderly Camp Lejeune today, the atmosphere back then sounds almost unimaginable. Here's an August 1969 report from NBC News correspondent Robert Goralski.
The conflict on the base itself has reached the point where even Vietnam veterans fear walking at night. Special, racially mixed patrols have been set up to prevent further violence. Large secluded areas have been illuminated with floodlights, and all outside lights are kept on till dawn.
Retired Massachusetts iron worker Robert Janot, who's white, was a young Marine stationed at Camp Lejeune then. He and friends had been at a bar on base watching the moon landing on TV.
Four or five of us walking back from the Enlisted Man's Club back to our barracks, and about 40 black Marines came around the corner, and all hell broke loose, so to speak.
One of the men with him was badly beaten.
He got knocked down, and the living stomped out of them.
Half a dozen attacks took place that night as groups of rioters roamed the base. A 20-year-old white corporal named Edward Bankston was beaten to death, and at least two white Marines were stabbed. For years beforehand, racial tension had been rising across the military. Black troops were no happier than their white counterparts at being drafted, and also faced institutionalized racism in the military. Former Drill Sergeant Willie Robertson of Clayton says black Marines faced demeaning treatment from white troops.
He would call you, he wouldn't call you Private Robinson. He might say, "Hey, Spliv, come here, Spliv." And I'm like, "Who's Spliv?" I had no idea what he was talking about. But the guys from up north, you know, they knew what it was. Well, he said, "They're calling you an N-word."
Robertson was badly wounded in Vietnam and had been sent back to Lejeune to recuperate. He was there when the rioting broke out, but didn't hear about it until later. It didn't surprise him, given the tensions among black Marines.
Most of them was on edge, and most of the stuff happening shortly right after Martin Luther King got killed. They just took it out on whites because it was a white man that killed Martin Luther King. So it was a very touchy time. It didn't take much to set blacks off then.
History professor James Westheider of the University of Cincinnati Claremont is the author of Fighting on Two Fronts, a book on African-American troops during the Vietnam War. He says black troops everywhere were on the same hair trigger.
Lejeune is really the first major racial gang fight in the military. After that, you see it at Millington, one at Kennahoe, one in Okinawa, and other places. So in many ways, it's really the prototype of what the military is going to go through in the next couple of years.
Westheider says early in the war, African Americans often saw the military in a positive light, as a place where they had a chance of a good career. But with younger draftees, less tolerant of racism, that began to change.
One of the turning points appears to be the assassination of Dr. King and the reaction of a lot of whites in Vietnam and throughout the U.S. military establishment, quite frankly, helped exacerbate this. At Cameron Bay, whites spontaneously made Klan uniforms and paraded with a Confederate flag when they heard the news. And there were other instances of groups of whites being overly joyous over the assassination.
The Lejeune riot, despite the rising tensions and dozens of other minor incidents there and elsewhere in the months leading up to it, caught military leaders off guard. The services had been desegregated for years, and Westheider says military leaders had no idea institutionalized racism remained a problem.
If you look at the Department of the Army's official report, 1968, they actually bragged that they had eliminated racism from the armed forces. So they did not assume that they were causing their own problem.
Changes were slow, but eventually the Pentagon addressed racial disparities in the military justice system, and it tackled another issue, the low number of black officers and senior enlisted leaders. Robertson, the black combat veteran, says a white officer had been surprised at his relatively high rank and tried to get him busted down.
I don't know about the other branches of service, but I know the Marines They weren't too cool with blacks being, especially in leadership positions. They didn't want any blacks to be able to tell a white soldier what to do.
The military also began to mandate race relations training, and Westheider says it pressured career troops to fall in line with the new thinking.
One thing about the armed forces, they can't change the way you think, but they certainly can change the way you act. And if you want to remain a member of the armed forces and get ahead, this became a priority for you. And actually, they did a pretty darn good job of it.
Not perfect, though.
No, never perfect. But conditions today in the armed forces are immensely better and more egalitarian than they were during the Vietnam War.
But he notes that problems with white supremacists in the military have surfaced again in recent months. Even half a century later, race relations in the military, as in the civilian world, remain a work in progress. For Here and Now, I'm Jay Price.